Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my man coming out of Ottawa, Josh Cohen.
Hungover like the Raptors.
Oh, that's harsh, dude. You think they were that hungover yesterday?
Well, they didn't play that well yesterday, but, you know, Denver earned the win. Props to them.
Yes, they did. We're recording this on a Tuesday morning after the pretty crazy game between the Nuggets and the Raptors. Obviously, I'm the Nuggets guy here. Josh is obviously a Raptors homer. So there was a lot of, you know, underlying emotion going into this game. And my guys pulled it out. Jokic obviously came out of there with a triple-double. And, like, one of the best flops I've seen all year to get literally the win. And the Raptors just couldn't handle it.
Yeah, it was disappointing they made that last call, but that wasn't the decider, as a lot of people were alluding to. I mean, it's obviously an awful call based on what we've seen the past, you know, 100 years in the NBA. Those calls just never get made at the end of games, you know? You can hug a guy, you can, like, bring a shotgun in and shoot a guy. You're never going to call that on an out-of-bounds play when a game is tied with, like, 5 seconds left.
Yeah, that was really weird. Even as a Nuggets fan, I didn't want to see that call made. It's like they're just battling inside. Who cares? Just let them run.
No, you want to see the players determine the game. And yet, here we are, a day later, and a foul call on an out-of-bounds play decided a huge game between the two best teams in, you know, each conference. So I guess the Clippers are still tops in the Western Conference, but Denver's pretty close.
No, Denver's a real top team in the conference. Let's be real. Nobody believes the Clippers can actually maintain this, but everyone actually thinks that the Nuggets will actually continue this into the playoffs. Or at least getting close to the playoffs. The Clippers can't.
Yeah,
can't
I'm not sure if they'll, you know, be able to keep this up in the playoffs because their defense, although it's been great through 20 games, you never know what's going to happen in the playoffs when the bright lights are on and all these guys who have never been in the playoffs before, you know, play these games. So it's going to be interesting to see. But going back to the game, there's a lot of different, you know, interesting aspects of the game itself. Jokic is obviously amazing yesterday. I think he had a double-double through halftime with assists, which you almost never see with seven-footers, obviously. I think they mentioned on the broadcast that he's the only player, seven-foot and over, that has recorded 15 assists in a game. He's done it 3 times. So he's obviously incredible.
Beast. An absolute beast, man. He was making some wicked passes, too. Like, he thread the needle a couple of times to get to Hernan Gomez. He obviously had that whip pass, like, cross-court to Murray in the corner. And then a bunch to Millsap, where he just didn't finish. So really, like, if you count the opportunities that were missed, he would have had, like, 18 assists, easy.
Yeah, probably. And that whip pass in the first half, especially when he got double-teamed. And everyone thought he's going to pass it at the top of the key to, I think it was Murray. And then he just threw it to the
Murray
corner.
Was in the corner.
Oh, was it? Okay. Recipient. I guess it's Monte Morris.
Yeah.
Yeah. They threw it to the corner, obviously, and nobody was there, obviously, because Toronto was double-teaming him. But, yeah, it was an amazing pass, obviously. And, you know, for the Toronto side of things, I have to bring up Kyle Lowry again. I mean, in the last 3 big games that Toronto has played against Denver, Golden State, and Boston, he was 1-for-7 against Denver, 4-for-14 against Golden State, and 3-for-12 on the road in Boston. So against these top defenses, his game just hasn't, you know, it hasn't translated in the biggest games. And I don't know, they're putting too much on Kawhi Leonard's shoulders right now. Siakam's been great in these games, obviously, too. Their bench has shown up at times, but Lowry's been the key, and teams have really honed in on him, and he never really allowed him to get to the free throw line with his flopping like they normally do, and his 3-point shooting hasn't been great either.
Yeah, he shot 1 for 7 yesterday, 1 for 6 from the three. So it was tough, but for someone who wasn't shooting very well, he looked like he was playing pretty good defense. Kind of controlled the pace of the game, like in the first half a bit. I mean, he wasn't that bad on offense to the point where you can't take it, where you can't leave him on, right?
No, I mean, he still makes plays obviously, but you don't want him to be considered a glue guy like a PJ Tucker making these little plays. He's like your second best player, so he needs to produce.
I don't think he is anymore. Apparently Pascal Siakam is their second best player now.
Siakam's getting up there right now. He's been incredible.
Yeah, career high 7 assists yesterday. He was all over the place, eh? Yeah, besides that little like travel he had at the end of the game, Pascal's been pretty solid this whole, like yesterday especially, but this whole year. He's been probably their most consistent player along with Kawhi.
Yeah, I love that the referees are treating him as a star now and not calling that travel at the end of the game.
That was blatant, man.
He took like a step then a hop step before he dribbled. That was like Jason Capone if Jason Capone never got called for a travel.
You know, I think it's because he
immediate
so
catch
long.
And run with it.
Yeah, I think it's because he's so long that they were just like, oh, whatever. He probably just extended his arm and just took a long dribble. But no, there was no long dribble. It was just steps. Come on, ref.
Yeah, and I think one underlooked aspect of just Denver's defense is how hard Jokic is playing on the defensive end. They're having him high hedge against most teams now, and I think that just gets his energy up and not having to lay back like sort of, you know, Jonas Valanciunas sort of does and, you know, other bigs that aren't able to move their feet. But I think with him staying active on the defensive end, it just gets him more in tune with what they're doing and being able to rotate to the corner and pick up shooters like he's doing that. And now he ran off OG from the line a couple times. When he was guarding him in the second and fourth quarters, which I thought was super impressive. So his effort level's on another level this year.
Yeah, between Jokic and basically every bench guy stepping up while Will Barton is out, it's huge. Gary Harris got hurt 9 minutes into the game. So they were really reliant on like Monte Morris and Michael Beasley to put in solid minutes. Beasley had 27 and Morris had 22 minutes each. And these guys, like, Beasley played down the stretch.
So and he played well, too.
Yeah. Like, he actually hit his shots. He was taking pull-ups. It was kind of weird to see, but it was nice. These guys can actually shoot the ball. And it's going a long way for this bench team, right?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, if you want to look at it from a simplistic point of view, Denver's role players hit their shots from the three-point line, and Toronto's dead. I mean, even Torrey Craig, who's not a shooter, hit 2 out of 3 threes yesterday. Malik Beasley had 3 threes on 3 attempts. And then obviously Wancho hit a couple of big threes at the end of the game.
Yo, CJ Miles hit threes.
And then, finally hit 2 out of 6, 33%. So that's better than what he's been shooting for the year, obviously. But Toronto shot 11 for 41 from three, which has been a consistent issue for them throughout the entire season. And the other issue is offensive rebounding. They gave up 15 offensive rebounds, and that's been a consistent issue over the course of the last few games, especially. So they got to clean that up. But I think the shooting is the bigger issue for Toronto right now. If they want to ensure that they get the NBA Finals, I think they're still one move away. They need to get one more bench guy, I think. Obviously, I wanted to get them to get Kyle Korver. But with him going to the Jazz now, I think they have to look in a different direction. Maybe with a guy like Wayne Ellington. Just a solid guy that can come off the bench, play some defense, and be a consistent shooter. Because so far this year, they've had no consistent shooting off the bench. I mean, their best bench player has probably been DeLon Wright, I would say, over the course of the last 10 games anyway. OG has probably been the most consistent in terms of his effort, but in terms of shooting, they just don't have anybody consistent. Even Fred VanVleet yesterday shot over 5 from 3, shot the same percentage as Kyle Lowry from the field at 1-7. So they just haven't had any consistency.
Yeah, it's been kind of tough for them, especially for a team that was touted to have like the best bench in the league last year. This year, their bench is totally mediocre or subpar at this point. And so everything's been solely reliant on Kawhi handling the offense and carrying them with shades of like, Ibaka or Siakam or Lowry and Green or whatever. But it's pretty much all on Kawhi's shoulders right now, and it's a little much. Granted, it's only December 4th, so there's still lots of time. You still have, 4 or 5 months until the playoffs start? But they really need to get these bench guys rolling again, because without them, they're not going to go very far in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the biggest change of production, though, has been, you know, since Siakam is starting, he's not playing with the second bench or the bench guys anymore. So with him not playing with the bench guys, they've had to find different routes to try to generate points, and it just hasn't really worked out for them so far. But I think that amount of production from the bench has sort of swayed to their front court, because obviously Serge and Pascal have been amazing and probably not their best producers, obviously. Lowry's been pretty consistent outside of those, you know, three big games. But they've been huge for Toronto, obviously. And they've been maybe the second and third most consistent throughout the course of the regular season. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, I don't know. Who else can they get other than Wade Ellington at this point? Because you need someone with like a decently small contract, because you have a lot of money tied up in Kawhi, Ibaka, and Lowry at this point. Who could you get for, like, who's at around, what, a $5 to $8 million contract?
I think there's guys out there. I mean, even a guy like, if you look at Minnesota, Anthony Tolliver's not even playing anymore, so he's a guy that was producing for them before they brought in Šarić, and now he's playing the backup 4 minutes, and Tolliver's stuck on the bench.
True.
So I think a guy like him would be pretty helpful.
Yeah. Let's make a call. Call up your guys. Tell them to switch Tolliver for CJ Miles, and you'll be set. Or maybe even Greg Monroe. There you go. Get both of them out of there.
I mean, if they have to give up like a second round pick or something for, you know, a guy that's on a 1 year contract, just do it, because they definitely need the shooting. And Danny Green's been super consistent from the 3-point line, but again, Lowry's got to get his game up, and they got to make sure that they get some form of shooting or consistency off the bench. Even Jonas has been bad the last five games too. Like, he was okay this game, but he missed a few chippies in the first quarter.
Yo, Jonas still can't play any D, eh?
I thought he was okay this game. I thought he protected the rim pretty well when the guards got in the lane.
Yeah, maybe I'm just looking at him more on the perimeter, because he's still slow as hell. I think I was comparing him too much to Jokic at this point, because at least Jokic has like long arms, so it seems that he can kind of contest shots on the outside. But Jonas sort of just like hedges back every time and sort of just lets the offense do what they want in pick and rolls.
Yeah, and you can see that teams really attack him when he comes in the game. Even yesterday when he was brought in, Jokic is still in the game, and they ran three consecutive pick and rolls with Jokic, and he got two of those floaters to go.
What was funny? Yesterday at one point, it was Jokic and Mason Plumlee versus JV and OG. Like, that's a crazy size mismatch. But what are you going to do against that kind of offense, right?
And they had OG fronting the post as well, so.
Yeah.
That was an interesting look. I think Toronto's going to do more of that as the season rolls on. They're going to have more small lineups and have their really quick, athletic, you know, forwards with OG and Siakam guard the bigger guys like Embiid and, you know, the star big men. And just try to over-rotate to them.
I think it works well with Siakam because he's longer and a little bit stronger than OG, but I don't think OG has the experience to really know how to defend guys like that.
But he is quick enough to where he can give guys problems. Just being, you know, quick with his feet and keep in front of people, make them take shots over him at least.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, let's move on. I think we've dissected this game pretty well. That was a good, like, 15 minutes of a Nuggets-Raptors game in December.
Yeah, and Toronto's played two really good games in a row. Well, if you don't count the Cleveland game, which I don't, because that wasn't really a game.
With the Golden State. Hello.
Sorry. But yeah, I mean, Toronto has Philadelphia coming up too on Wednesday, so they got a really tough stretch coming up. So it should be interesting to see how they come out of it. But moving along, I wanted to talk about Minnesota actually.
Ooh. Okay. Haven't lost since the Butler.
Minnesota sits. No, they've lost a couple times, but they're 8-3 since the trade.
Oh, okay.
And they're second in defense since the trade as well. Whereas before this little stretch where, you know, Philadelphia started to try on defense, they were 28th in the league. I think now they're around 17th after the last few games where they've stepped it up on defense in terms of defensive rating. But Minnesota, they've just played really solid basketball. And I think with the trade, guys' roles are more defined now. Especially with Roko coming in the fold. Like, he's one of the better defensive players in the NBA. You've seen that with his, you know, on-court, off-court production. When he's on the court, Minnesota produces at an extremely high level in the defensive end especially. He's knocked down a few shots as well in these 11 games. And then, Šarić coming off the bench, he's been a surprising defensive anchor as well. I mean, he's been pretty good off the bench. And obviously Towns is trying harder on defense. Wiggins is trying harder on defense, even though he can't hit a shot right now. But, you know, they have a really good closing lineup as well. When Derrick Rose comes in the game, when Wiggins is not playing well, it seems like every game now. And it just seems like things are working for them.
Yeah, talk about the resurgence of Derrick Rose, eh? Holy shit.
Yeah, I think before yesterday's game where he went 0-for-4 from the field, he has 51-49 and 84 shooting splits. So 51% from the field, 49% from three, and then 83% from the free throw line. So he's one of the most efficient players in the NBA. And his three-point percentage is the most surprising thing, shooting near 50% from the field. His shot just looks, it has more arc on it, and he's getting more his legs underneath him. So maybe it just took him 4 years to finally figure it out and get back to full health.
Yeah, he's changed his game a lot too, right? Like, he's no longer just purely attacking the rim with, you know, just bulldogging his way in there like he used to, or like herking and jerking his way in. It's a lot more jumpers now. It's smooth. But getting back to the rest of the team, like, Covington is exactly what this team needed from the very get-go, right? Just a guy who can just stand in the corner or stand at the wing and shoot the ball and just play amazing defense. You let Towns and Wiggins be this, well, you let Towns be the star that he actually is, and Wiggins try to be the star that he should be. Obviously, he's not performing the way you want him to, but that's how you want this team to be set up. And you can really see it on their faces, man. Like, looking at Kat and Wiggins play before and after the trade, it's a completely different person. Kat was literally a shell of himself, like, the whole season leading up to it. And then as soon as that trade happened, it was just like the flick of a finger, and then everything just turned around for the guy.
Yeah, and Wiggins, although he's trying really hard on defense, he has played better on the defensive end. In the last 10 games, his offense has just fallen off a cliff again. He started off well after Butler got traded. I think he was shooting like 40% from three overall for the season. And since then, obviously, like I said before, Derrick Rose is ending games in the shooting guard spot and closing lineups. And Wiggins, he keeps taking just really bad shots off the dribble. Like, it just doesn't seem like he's learned anything over the course of his career so far. And when you listen to the Minnesota broadcast, they just keep bringing it up. They're like, Andrew needs to attack these mismatches better than he's doing right now, because oftentimes he'll get switches to where he posts up from 18 feet and he ends up taking a fadeaway jump shot or a pull-up jumper. And you're just like, just go to the basket. You're one of the most athletic players in the NBA, and you're a good free throw shooter normally. His percentage is down this year, but overall he's normally at around 70-75%, which is decent. But it's a better percentage than him chucking up those long twos, and he just hasn't really adjusted to the modern day NBA game.
He's a soft dude, man. I think mentally he's just soft.
Like, I think we should just denounce him as a Canadian, too, since he doesn't play for our team.
Yeah, between that, not wanting to participate in the dunk contest because he knows LaVine is a better dunker than him, like, you can just see he doesn't have that killer edge that a lot of guys will have, or that you would want as either ownership, as a teammate, like, whatever, as an executive. Like, you want someone who's going to be out there looking for his every night, or at least looking to improve the team somehow. He sort of just goes out there, he's lackadaisical, he's chill, and it's not what you want, actually, on the floor. You want someone, like, I think the whole purpose of bringing guys in like Taj Gibson or Anthony Tolliver was to show him, you know, this is how you could be. This is what you have to do to get to that level, but it just never happened.
Yeah, and as a Raptors fan, I always got on Vince Carter, obviously, in his early years for not really fully tapping into his potential and playing up to the level we all expected. I mean, his first couple years were obviously amazing in the NBA, but after that, he sort of tailed off a little bit of his effort level and, you know, the way he was playing. And I think it's the same sort of thing with Wiggins, too, except Vince probably tapped into his potential maybe 80% of the time, whereas Wiggins is at, what, 20-30%?
Yeah, tops.
Yeah, and I don't know. It just doesn't seem like he cares all that much. I mean, a lot of people have brought that up in the past, but you'd think in his, what, I think it's his fifth season or sixth season now, he would show some form of improvement in some area of his game. He's still a bad rebounder. He's not a good passer. He's doesn't get to the line. So all these things that you want him to become, he just hasn't really shown a propensity to do these things, and it's just really frustrating.
It's actually his fifth year, right? I didn't even realize
that. Yeah, I believe
that.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, because LeBron was in Cleveland for 4 years, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so then this would be his fifth. Damn. He really hasn't improved over 5 years. He's basically the same player, except maybe a little bit bigger. But, yeah, he doesn't really attack
much. Is he,
much.
Though? I'm not even sure if he's got in the weight room.
I'm giving him benefit of the doubt on that one. I'm just assuming that over time your body will grow. But that's tough. Do you think they'll like figure something out with their power forward position here? This whole thing between Saric and Gibson is kind of weird. It's basically just whoever's like playing better that game. Tibbs just sticks with them.
I think it's fine. I mean, again, they're 8-3 since the trade, so it is working right now. And, you know, when teams are playing a more traditional style for what today's NBA is, when they have stretch fours out there, I think you're better off having Saric out there because he's able to, you know, play better perimeter defense than Taj. But if you're playing more of a style where you want to bang the boards against a really small team or a team that plays more traditional circa 2010, like the Grizzlies, for example, then you want Taj in the game. And I think they've experimented, too, with a couple of lineups where you have, like, Rocco at the four, playing a more pace of space type of, you know, type of deal. So, you know, they're multi-dimensional now, and the parts do fit outside of Wiggins just not playing well. And, you know, obviously Derrick Rose has been amazing, and the Timberwolves are rolling right now. I'm not sure if they're going to make the playoffs still, but they've been fun to watch over the course of, you know, the last 11 games.
Where do they sit in the standings right now?
They're not where everyone else is right now. They're 12-12. So.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, they're not. So they're sitting at 12.
They're all tied for eighth.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not bad, man. They could easily make the playoffs.
But they're all tied for eighth slash fourth. So slash 12. Seems like every team in the West is 12-12 besides Denver, Oklahoma, Golden State, and the Clippers, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Wow, the Lakers, 14-9.
Yeah, they've had a pretty easy part of their schedule, though. So. They don't really impress me.
Yeah. Are we concerned about the Rockets? Like, genuinely concerned about the Rockets yet?
I think you have to be, because normally 20 games is the precursor as to what's going to happen throughout the course of the year. I mean, the standings are a mess right now, which, you know, is very rare for the NBA, where you have 14 teams that are vying for the playoffs. Normally there's about, you know, 11, maybe 10. But yeah, the Rockets, even with Chris Paul and Clint Capella both in the lineup there, I think they're 11-7 now overall. And last year, I think they were 51-3 or something insane like that.
Yeah. They're shaking it, man. Like, there is literally no depth on this team anymore. Joel Green is a wash. Nene is obviously like old as hell and he's been hurt pretty much all year. Eric Gordon doesn't look like Eric Gordon at all. Chris Paul yesterday shot 1-for-8. Your man, Chris Paul, who's on, like, a bajillion-dollar contract at this point. You want to talk about bad contracts with Butler and Wall? Chris Paul is going to get paid till he's, like, 36, 37.
Chris Paul is still a much better player than those guys.
Not by much. Not by much, man. Not if he keeps playing the way he is right now.
No, I think both those guys just need better wing depth around them, but that's going to be hard to get when you're all capped out, and I think they're... they're beyond the luxury tax right now as well. So the only way for them to acquire a type of player is to make a trade or just get somebody in the buyout market, which they may have to wait until February for. So it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to be able to increase the talent level of this team, because that's the biggest aspect, I think, as to why they're struggling.
I hope somehow that they don't make the playoffs, just to do my guy Melo some justice here.
See, I want the opposite. I want them to be the 8th seed. And I want them to take on Golden State in the first round and give them a test.
But Golden State won't be the first pick, though. Or the first seeded team. First pick.
Oh, yeah, because the Clippers are going to keep the first seed throughout the course of the regular season.
No, I was going to say Denver, man. Come on now.
No, I think once Draymond comes back, they're going to go on a massive run and just remind everyone that they're by far the best team in the NBA, if not the best team of all time.
Yeah, probably. Yo, I have a question for you. How is it that you hate on the Jimmy Butler trade so much? Like, obviously, because it leads to his contract being extended until he's, like, 34 or whatever. When Chris Paul is actually being paid, like, 40-something a year until he's, like, 36. Other than, like, your obvious love for Chris Paul. But he's tied up their salary cap even more so than Butler would, right?
No, this is true, but Houston had a better situation going into it, I think. I mean, they were almost in the NBA Finals, if not, you know, if they won against Golden State, but they probably won it all, right? So I think they're at a different level than what Philadelphia's at right now. I think Philadelphia's, they're a contender for getting to the finals, but I don't think you can say that they're in the same tier as Houston was last year in being like a top level team that's on par with Golden State, who might be the best team ever.
But they didn't give Chris Paul the contract last year. They gave it to him this summer.
No, but you had to pay him, right?
Why?
They're hoping to come back next year and have the same type of team and just, you know, run it back, obviously, and try to get him healthy and keep him healthy throughout the course of the regular season so he's ready for Golden State again in the semifinals, conference finals, whenever it's going to be. It might be the first round now, as we said. But I think they might have just cheaped out with, you know, not bringing back Trevor Ariza and Mbamute, who's injured now again, but they just didn't really improve their roster, and they're hoping for a home run with Melo, and that obviously didn't work out. Now they're stuck with, you know, a bench full of guys who just cannot produce on a consistent basis. So when you have, I think their margin for error is just less this year. So when you have Eric Gordon shooting 33% from the field and you just have one less guy contributing, you only have four guys doing it on a consistent basis with, you know, Paul, Harden, Capella, Tucker. But outside of those guys, you're just like, where are we going to get points from? Where are we going to get production from? And I think also teams have just adjusted to how they play too. I think they're trapping more on the ball instead of allowing, you know, Harden and Paul just to ISO every single possession and take on the mismatch. So that's also been an interesting look that Houston hasn't really figured out yet because they don't have the talent around them to make them pay for that.
I think the only consistent player that they've had so far has been like PJ Tucker since like the beginning of the season. Chris Paul obviously was suspended for a while, and then he's been pretty shaky all year. And same with James Harden. James Harden obviously came in out of shape, as he always does, after his MVP season. And he's slowly been working his way back into it, and like after his injury as well. But they've been pretty shaky, man. Like, PJ Tucker's the only guy who actually showed up and was, one, healthy, and two, in shape to play. Capella has his games on and off, as always. That's about it. And I think part of it is because they sort of just tied up all their money in Harden, Capella, and Chris Paul. And it's not going to end anytime soon because Chris Paul is paid for another 4 years. Harden is obviously their superstar, so he's obviously going to get paid no matter what. And Capella is, what, 3 years now?
Capella's had a four-year contract, if not five, I think.
Damn. So they have.
And Capella's been good this year. I mean, he's had a career year so far, so I don't really think that he's part of that group that you're talking about. But, you know, in terms of Chris Paul and James Harden, obviously they have their, you know, be more consistent. And especially later in games, I think, you know, Harden's put up some huge games the last 2 weeks. He's had a 50-point game. He had a triple-double up as well in a loss against Dallas. But later in games, that ISO style just doesn't work against good teams because they just hone in on him. They make him play late in the shot clock. And teams have just gotten better with keeping their hands up instead of trying to reach in, and Harden hasn't got to the line as much this year either.
Yeah, I would be very concerned about Houston at this point. And then going forward for the next few years as well, because all that money is tied up. There's not really much of a direction for this team to go in at this point.
No, I think they're hoping their window would be in the next 2, maybe 3 years, but it's looking like it might be a 1 year thing, if not two. It depends on who they get at the trade deadline. And
it doesn't matter, man. Chris Paul being your second best player at 34 or 35 years old isn't a good sign. You know what I mean?
No, I think if he's healthy, he's still a big, you know, contributor, obviously, in the playoffs as well.
35 years old for a 6-foot point guard? Wow, you're such a...
I mean, they had to tie him up, man. So they had to sign him with that 4-year contract.
What's that?
They had to sign him with that 4-year contract, because else you're just going to let him go for nothing, and then you're still stuck in a really bad cap situation. So you're better off going over the cap, paying the luxury tax for a couple of years. But again, if you're going to do that, you might as well just sign Ariza as well, right?
Exactly. If you're going to pay him, you might as well just pay the whole team. And yeah, literally try to run it back.
I get like them letting go of Mbamute, but the Ariza thing just didn't make any sense to me.
Oh, mine was the opposite. Mbamute is only $4 million, where Ariza costed $15 million.
So, no, but Mbamute has been injured the last couple of years, and even this year he's had knee injuries. He had shoulder injuries last year, and true. Even though he's a big value, if he's not going to play, he's not a value at all. So
this is true. This is true. Houston, man, get it together.
Let's talk about a fun team this year that has come back from a season where they were obviously in the lottery, and they were able to trade for the future best player in the NBA, Luka Doncic. The Dallas Mavericks have gotten off to a great start this season, and they're extremely fun to watch, and they might have the sixth man of the year in J.J. Barea as well.
You know, J.J. Barea coming back with a resurgence this year. Apparently this guy never leaves Dallas, because even when he went to Minnesota, he never wanted to leave Dallas.
No, he played bad Minnesota too. Then he came back to Dallas and he was same old J.J. Yeah,
he tanked his way out of Minnesota.
It seemed like it.
Yeah, they're incredible this year. And they're doing it all without Dirk. This offense is just flowing. Luka's obviously leading every single break. And DeAndre Jordan is shooting like 80% from the free throw line or something absurd like that. These guys have really come together for what is essentially like a one-year rental at this point with DJ, right?
You know, they should just give DeAndre Jordan the most improved player just based on his free throw percentage.
That's not a bad idea.
Seriously. It's insane. I mean, you talk about like the most improved aspect of somebody's game, going from 40% free throw shooter to 80% in 1 year, that's incredible.
He probably got Dirk's shooting coach. That's all he needed. Someone to get him out of his own head.
Yeah, Hans Gruber.
There you go. 75.6%. How insane is that? 30% increase.
Quite impressive.
Compared to his career.
Quite impressive. And I'm not sure if you've seen that video to where like it shows what he's doing to take his mind off the free throw itself. Every time he gets to the free throw line now, he talks to his teammates on the sides of the free throw line and telling them what their defensive assignment is. After every single free throw and before the free throw, the first shot. So that's been a big change in terms of getting his mind, I guess, off the free throw and just letting it go versus him taking a few dribbles, thinking about it, and you know, obviously missing the last couple of years.
The funny part is that
change.
The funny part is that he'll still do it even if no one's there. So you know how when you're on offense, like sometimes for the first shot, there's only one guy that stands in there. Sometimes it's not both. He still will like do the high five and then still assign an assignment to whoever's there, even though it's just like a blank space. It's literally just to get out of his own head.
Yeah, I think. It was the Rockets. They played the Rockets 2 games ago, and they blew them out, and they had DJ take a technical free throw, and as you were saying, he was talking to nobody, because nobody's at the free throw line during the technical free throw, talking about a defensive assignment. I'm sure the people in the front row were like, is he talking to me right now?
Or more like, how crazy is this guy?
Yeah, seriously. But the fact they have him shooting technical free throws, too, just to get his confidence up, I mean, it's pretty incredible at this point.
Yeah, I love that. Real trust in your guy at that point. Who do you think is leading this team in blocks?
Oh, my boy, Maxi Kleber.
Maxi Kleber is averaging 1.3 blocks. DJ, 1.05.
Yeah, I mean, in his second season, even last year, he showed glimpses of being a pretty solid defensive player. And honestly, Dallas's bench has been the best in the NBA thus far. Devin Harris has had a resurgence in terms of his three-point shooting. And Dorian Finney-Smith has shown himself to be a pretty good 3-and-D guy as well. He's started for many games for them so far this year, with Harrison Barnes being at the start of the year, and Wes Matthews missing some games as well.
Yeah.
He shot a pretty high percentage from three, and he's very active. He sort of reminds me of OG a little bit.
Yeah, except he's able to shoot. When did that happen? He wasn't a good shooter last year. This guy just
He wasn't a good shooter at all. He came back, and he's been an incredible three-point shooter.
Yeah, he's averaging 38.5 from the three. That's pretty good for a 3-and-D guy. Someone who's off the bench plays, what, maybe 15, 20 minutes a game?
He's had to play a lot of minutes, too, with their injuries as well. He's played like 38 minutes in some games, and he's been pretty effective. He hasn't been a negative, which you would think, based on his performance the last couple of years, but he's going to get paid once his contract comes up.
Man, good for him. Good for this team. They've really come together, all just behind Luka. Harrison Barnes doesn't have to be the leading scorer anymore. You're not relying solely on Wes Matthews shooting, and DSJ doesn't have to set up the offense every time. I mean, it's pretty perfect, because none of those guys excel or like are top-notch players at what they're supposed to be good at. They're good at what they do, but they're not amazing, right? So if you have someone like Luka to take off a lot of the pressure from those guys and give them easy looks, it's absolutely perfect.
And in saying all this, I would guess that almost every single player outside of Luka on this team right now will not be on this team in T-minus, maybe even 1 year.
I wonder if they'll be able to keep DJ.
Do they want to keep him? That's the question. I mean, he's had a pretty good year overall in terms of his free throw percentage and production, but defensively he's been on and off, and obviously he's a rebound whore.
Which is okay, man. Sometimes you just let guys get their stats. Because you can't just turn around this. You can't just turn around the roster in one offseason.
No, but I mean, if they want to go out after the big fish and try to rebuild really fast, they might want to renounce a bunch of guys and just try to go after, you know, the key free agents, maybe even a Kawhi Leonard, you know, Kevin Durant. You never know. I mean, Dallas has, they've been in that circle before where they've tried to get the big fish and they've struck out on every single one so far.
Exactly.
But you still have a big market. You got Mark Cuban. You got, you know, Dirk is the ambassador. Luka Doncic has shown himself to be, you know, a guy that you can build around. So maybe they will be a player as soon as next year. But if not, you know, just keep building through the draft and, you know, try to keep some of these guys around. And they have to make a decision as to what they want to do with Dennis Smith Jr.
Yeah, too. I don't think he's going to be around for very long. He's the one guy that I can see them giving up on after his rookie contract is over. But
yeah,
who, like, over the past few years, who have they actually signed that's a big major free agent? Other than Harrison Barnes. It took them the second try to get DJ.
Right. Well, they tried to get Boogie Cousins, too, before he got injured, and that didn't work out either.
They tried to get Boogie. They tried to get Melo when he was, like, younger. They tried for LaMarcus Dwight Aldridge Howard.
As well.
Who?
LaMarcus Aldridge as well.
LaMarcus. Darren Williams when he was still good. Well, I guess they got him eventually.
They got the bad version of Darren.
Yeah, exactly. They got him, like, 3 years too late. But you know what I mean? Like, they never actually get anyone in, and they're always in the talks for it, so until it happens, I'm not considering them as a viable option for any free agent. Or a realistic option.
No, but
option.
If they continue this progression this year and they actually make the playoffs, I think Dallas is going to be a destination that, you know, guys will want to go to, at least if they don't get the top-tier players. Maybe they get somebody like a Chris Middleton, like a guy that's not quite a superstar-type level player, but a really, really productive player.
Yeah, I think their best chance is to go after guys who are, like you said, Chris Middleton, the second or third-tier guys. Who will just, you know, go in, know their role, know how the team is set up, the culture is set up, and just go in and do their jobs. Basically try to replicate what they had in 2011. I think that's the best option for this team, because I just don't foresee Dallas getting any major superstars.
No, and again, if they don't get any of those guys, just continue to try to make some trades to build around Luka. Instead of just trying to bring guys like, you know, even like guys like Wes Matthews and Harrison Barnes, they don't really fit to what you want to build around Luka, I don't think. Because both of those guys, I think, just take too many shots away from him and take too many possessions away from him. So I think going into next year, as he continues to improve, you want to make him your focal point instead of just making him as, you know, he's led most, like a lot of the offense, but I think they still have way too many possessions that they should be going through him more in mismatches in the post because he is 6'8". So when you're able to get like a smaller guard on him, just go to him. And I think Carlisle's done a good job in, you know, his progression and not putting too much on his shoulders, but I think he's ready for it, honestly.
He probably is ready for it, but I think it's more of just getting the vets their own touches at this point. I don't mind Wes Matthews on this team because you need a 3-and-D guy. Harrison Barnes obviously is not ideal for the situation, nor is he ideal for, you know, most situations at his contract, basically.
Yeah, for what he gets paid. He's played pretty productive this year, but if he's going to get paid $25 million a year, I don't think that's a guy you want to keep around.
Yeah, he's got that Otto Porter production in terms of his contract value.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ouch. Otherwise, man, Dallas is looking nice. Luka's... we've sung a lot of praise about the team, but we haven't actually talked about Luka himself that much. This guy's incredible. He might be, like, the best offensive rookie I've seen in a long-ass time.
Yeah, probably since LeBron.
Maybe, yeah.
Honestly. Like,
he controls the pace.
Or since 25-5 Tyreek Evans.
Oh, that was a magical year for that guy. How the mighty have fallen.
Indeed.
Yeah. But yeah, Luka's controlling the pace. He can shoot the ball really well. He's got big balls, man. You saw those two corner threes against Houston last week. Like, there was no hesitation in him either. He was just like pulling up, whatever. Took a pull up from like the logo to end the half of that game. Super casual, didn't even care. Like, this dude is for real.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference between him and any other rookies coming into the league is because he's had that experience in Europe playing with grown men for the last 4 or 5 years. He just knows how to play, especially in the pick and roll. So he has so many different shots that he can, you know, shoot in the pick and roll, and he knows how to snake the pick and roll. He knows how to, you know, use it to where if a guy is going under, he knows how to shoot it. He knows how to get to the basket and shoot those little floaters from 5 or 10 feet. And you just don't see rookies come in with those types of shots. Even a guy like Trae Young coming in, his shot making has not been good thus far this year. He's shown better playmaking skills off the dribble in terms of passing the ball than he has shooting it. And with Luka, he's just able to stop on a dime and hit those little 10-foot shots, and it just opens up Dallas's offense just with him being able to play in that area and make those shots off the dribble. Because most rookies coming in, they don't have a good percentage at all, off the dribble especially. And going back to a guy like Kemba Walker, who's an amazing off-the-dribble player now, in his rookie season, he shot 35% from the field. So you just show that, you know, rookies coming in, they have a long line of progression that they need to make before they're able to master the pick-and-roll play, which is, you know, the NBA's highest usage play, obviously. And Luka's just shown himself to be a high-level player already at 19 years old.
What a boss. I don't have much else to say other than what a boss. He's killing it.
Yeah, and he's by far the rookie of the year right now, but Jaren Jackson's on the come up right now.
Yeah, Jaren Jackson's been crushing it in Memphis. Memphis is like a nice undercover team at this point, too. They're sitting at 13-9, sixth spot in the West. Obviously, they had a couple of shaky games last week, but they're still doing their thing. Grit and Grind is really back. Jaren Jackson is actually, probably the second best rookie at this point. If he was in the East, he would have won, like, Rookie of the Month in the conference easily.
Yeah, I think so. And the biggest thing with him is his shot making ability. Again, just like Luka, he's been able to make shots around the paint, which is something that you wouldn't really expect from a rookie coming in. I think he's the youngest player in the NBA right now, and he's been able to post up veteran players and hit those little hook shots. He hasn't shot well from three yet. I think he's shooting like 23% or so, but you can see that he has the ability to shoot the shot. It's just a matter of him getting comfortable with it, which again is why it's so impressive that Luka's been able to do what he's done and shooting, I think, 37 or 38% from three already. Just getting used to the longer three-point line is a big thing for rookies coming in, and even though Jackson hasn't adjusted that, that's probably his only downside outside of his fouls, which has been a big issue for him throughout certain games. Against Toronto, I think he fouled out in like 15 minutes, but when he's been able to stay on the floor, he's been a monster. I mean, last week he had a game where he had 37 points against Brooklyn. He had a McGrady-like 7 points in 20 seconds to bring the Grizzlies back to where they were. Yeah, they were down 7 points with 33 seconds left, and he had a 4-point play, then hit the game-tying 3-point shot, and they went in double overtime. So pretty impressive.
Yeah, he's long as hell too, right? Like his helps ID is so good. Like you can let basically anyone pass by, and if Marc Gasol is not going to get it, Jaren Jackson is waiting right behind him.
Yeah, and I think being able to learn from Gasol too in his first year is huge, because I think ultimately he's going to be a five in the NBA. So once Gasol's contract runs out, I think they're going to see them build around him as a five instead of a four.
When's Gasol's contract up? Do you know? Next year, I think.
Yeah, I think it's next season, which is why they were always talking about him last year as a big trade candidate, because at least if you trade him last year, you have 2 years still at a pretty high production level on a pretty decent cost. Contract for what he produces. He's been arguably the best defensive player in the NBA thus far, and he's produced at a high level in offense as well with his three-point shooting, his play around the basket. He's still able to hit those little fadeaway shots which you never think are going in because he shoots them flat-footed. Yeah. But him and Conley have been great thus far this year, and they're another team just like New Orleans, just like a few other teams, that just needs wing production in the worst way.
Yeah, pretty much 70% of the league needs slightly better wing production. And then you have a team like Boston who's just hoarding like three or four good perimeter players.
Yeah, exactly. Even like a small little change is having a guy that like Kent Bazemore in the lineup that can, just hit a few threes, knock down some shots.
Maybe not Kent Bazemore.
Defense. Bazemore is all right. I think he's going to go to a good team and prove his worth this coming trade deadline.
I'm not sold on him. I was never sold on him. He seems like a high energy guy that's not going to produce otherwise to me.
Well, I disagree. I like Kent Bazemore. I'm a fan.
Why? He's not that good of a shooter.
He's been okay the last few years. He's been 35 to 39%, I think. And that's on bad teams, too. So if he gets into a good situation like Houston, to where all he has to do is take wide open shots, yeah, I think you'll see his percentage tick up.
That would be nice if he was in Houston. Then they wouldn't have to play James Ennis and who's that other guy?
Gary Clark.
Gary Clark, yeah.
Clark has been okay this year as a rookie, too, but he's inconsistent.
Yeah,
and
he's
need
on
a
last.
Yeah, you need a consistent player at that position when you're going to play 20, 25 minutes off the bench.
You got anything else?
Well, I guess we can go to Stats Corner. All right, so I got two stats for you this week. So the first one is assist percentage. So we've already talked about one of the players that has the highest assist percentage, and just for those who don't know, assist percentage is an estimated percentage of teammate field goals a player assisted on while the player is on the court. So one of the players we have talked about is JJ Barea, and he's actually number one in assist percentage while on the court at 46%, which is amazing. And quite shocking, if you know, to be honest. I mean, Dallas's bench has been incredible thus far this year, and he's been the focal point of it. But can you name the other four that are in the top five in terms of assist percentage while on the floor this season? So guys have the ball in their hands a lot of the time, and they assist on a high percentage of the team shots while on the floor.
You mean Jokic?
Jokic is not in the top five.
Awesome bull.
That's because Denver's been so good overall. I mean, they have so many different, you know, consistent players on the perimeter, especially. He doesn't handle the ball as much as you would think.
He gets a lot of assists, though. How about Kyle Lowry? Leading Kyle Lowry.
He is not there. He is not in the top five.
Well, I don't like your list. How can the league leader not be tops in this list? Simmons?
There should be two right off the bat that we just talked about.
Oh, Doncic?
Who handles the ball more? No. Who handles the ball more than anybody, especially on one specific team?
What? That we just talked about? Conley?
Yes. That we talked about in a segment before that segment.
Who did we? Harden.
Yes, Harden's at 43% of his team shots.
Wow, no kidding. Chris Paul's not in there. There's no way.
Chris Paul is number five.
Man, no wonder you like this stupid stat. All right, give me... Is Russ?
Russ is not on there. He's had a slow start to the year.
Oh, De'Aaron Fox.
De'Aaron Fox is not on there as well.
Oh, man, this list is some bull.
It's two players where you're going to say, like, after we obviously go over them, you're going to say to yourself, I should have got these two guys. They're on bad teams, so.
Bad teams. Booker?
No.
Not bad enough. Rubio?
Not bad enough. Rubio, no. Rubio's at, what, I think 5 assists per game so far, so he's not in there.
Who actually gets assists these days? Is John Wall?
John Wall is number four.
Ooh, shouts to John Wall. Having kind of a decent season, or like a few games ever since
he's out. He's been terrible. He's been bad.
No, he's been decent.
That's wise.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm not watching a Wizards game. Come on now. Dame?
Nope. Damn. Fellow Rookie of the Month.
Oh, Trey?
Trey Young at 39.7%.
Yeah, never gonna guess the Hawks for anything. Sorry.
No, they're the forgotten team this year.
Yeah, with Cleveland. Literally. Unless you tell me literally the worst team in the league, I'm never gonna think of them.
Indeed. So, my second stat is offensive rebound percentage. So this puts a player's number of offensive rebounds in proportion to the total amount of offensive rebounds available when they're in active play. So who are the top five offensive rebounders in terms of percentage while they're in the game?
Is DJ in this list?
He is not.
Is Joel Embiid?
He is not.
Is Tyson Chandler? Tyson Chandler's a boss at offensive rebounds.
It's because he had a slow start to the year and only playing a few minutes in Phoenix. I don't think he's on the list for that reason.
Wow, this is off to a wonderful start.
Indeed.
Man.
Think of the big offensive rebounders.
That's what I'm trying to think of. Give me Trez.
He is not on there.
Is Giannis?
When you think of offensive rebounding right away, over the course of the last few years, who do you think of?
Oh, Drummond.
Yes, Drummond's number two.
Who the hell's number one?
Number one you're probably not going to get. But the other ones I think you might.
Giannis is not on this list?
No.
Wow.
Think of big burly centers. Whiteside. Whiteside is not on the list.
Big and burly, and you're telling me Whiteside is not on your list? Steven Adams?
I think Steven Adams is eighth.
Oh my god. Yo, these lists are trash, man.
I think you're
trash. No, these advanced analytics are whack. Give me AD.
AD is not on the list.
You mean LaMarcus?
Also.
Gobert.
Oh, not on the list.
Capella.
Nope. Nope. Who's been one of the best offensive rebounders, especially in the playoffs, who has killed the Raptors in the series?
Fat-ass Tristan Thompson? Come on.
Fat-ass Tristan Thompson is at 15.4% overall.
Oh, my God.
He is third.
Stats are useless, man. You're telling me Tristan Thompson...
Who rebounds... Well, he's been good this year, stats-wise, anyway.
Stats-wise, yeah, yes.
And then think about New York. Who's in New York?
Oh, and Jared Allen?
No.
Or the actual New York team?
The actual New York Knicks. Not Brooklyn.
Oh, man.
Who's been a rebounding demon thus far this year?
Oh, the young guy. Robinson? Mitchell?
Man, you are so off this morning.
Who else?
And it's Cantor, man. Come on now.
Yo, come on. You're literally naming off scrubs with these stats.
How dare you call Enes Kanter a scrub?
You named off...
Turkish pride.
You named off Enes Kanter, Tristan Thompson. Who was your other one?
Andre Drummond? Scrub.
Come on. What are these stats that you're coming up with? Advanced analytics don't go that far, man. Come on now.
So the other two are Jusuf Nurkić at number 4 in Portland. And number 1, Ed Davis. Continuing to be an offensive rebounding demon.
Okay, well, next time you want to talk about scrubs, you can find someone else to talk to. What are these numbers, man? Why is that such a relevant stat that you need? It's basically who can hustle the most on offense, right? But not in the whole game, because we're giving these guys limited minutes every time. Ed Davis isn't playing more than...
I don't know. 4 of those guys have played pretty good amount of minutes.
How many minutes does Ed Davis play? 25 tops?
Yeah, but the other 4 guys are up there.
Big stretch. Enes Kanter is playing for one of the worst teams in the league. Tristan Thompson's team is literally trash. Just because you play a lot for garbage teams doesn't mean that you're anything relevant.
Hey, don't insult the stat, okay? Jesus, what's wrong with you?
No, man, I'm insulting the stat because it's crazy. Why are we not talking about the actually good rebounders?
Well, these guys are good rebounders. They're just on pretty disgusting teams.
Exactly.
Well, aside from Drummond and Nurkić, obviously.
Yeah, sure. That's how you want to look at it.
I mean, both those teams have gotten off to good starts, but I think they're going to be on the downslide the rest of the year.
Yeah, Detroit's going to end up 8th in the East. Portland, probably 6-8 at this rate.
But I don't know. Maybe offensive rebounding is the next trend in the NBA. You never know.
Or maybe it's not. Maybe it was a trend and then isn't going to go any further. Because offensive...
Well, something's got to change if these teams shoot all these threes.
The thing is, with offensive rebounds, you're not going to get many of them as a center, because all threes... you know how it is. If you have a long shot, the rebound is going to go long with it. It's rare that you get a soft touch off a offensive rebound. Or off a 3, I mean. So how is a big burly center going to keep getting all these rebounds when they're going out to 15, 16 feet every time?
More so means sending 2 or 3 guys to the boards in terms of getting guys near the free throw line, just trying to get those long rebounds instead of running back immediately. Most teams only send 1 guy to the boards. So maybe that's the solution to punish teams that are playing small ball, just sending 2 or 3 guys instead of 1 guy to the boards and play more... of a style where you have maybe 2 big men in the lineup at certain points of the game to try to punish teams for playing a 6'7" guy power forward.
That's true. That's a good point. But then on the other hand, you're losing out on guys to stop the fast break. Right? You're missing out on guys who will defend the perimeter within those 2 seconds that it takes to catch a ball, send it up court, and then shoot it immediately.
Yeah, it depends on your personnel and if they have high motors to be able to go in for that rebound and run back quickly on defense. So, yep. Or maybe just play guys less minutes so they can do that.
Is that it for Stats Corner?
That's it for Stats Corner.
Then that is it for us this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, all the major platforms. Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace. Thank you.